Megabus Diaries, Chapter 3. Tears in the Rain. I'm lost. I'm not looking for salvation. I'm not a victim. I'm a traveller. But I'm lost. It feels like a question steeped in tragic irony, but I ask myself, what happened to certainty? What happened to the strength of my convictions? What happened to where I was going? Did we reach the destination and I missed it? Or was it never really anything more than a stop along the way? We got lost. I sense the uncomfortable warmth of an anxious sadness emanating from the centre of my chest. I risk a glance at the guy sat next to me, but he's frantically texting or Snapchatting or interacting in some way with someone in whom he appears to be heavily invested. He's too engrossed to sense my attention resting gently on his little world. We are living in our bubble worlds on the bus, each one a carefully configured filtering system to keep people out and identity in. I read a book once in which people were able to obscure themselves physically to different degrees depending on how private or public they chose to be at any particular time. A sophisticated firewall system. That's it, isn't it? We all have our firewalls up to prevent infection. I open the window in my firewall a little wider so that I can see more of the residents of this rolling community of strangers. I register a movement next to me out of the corner of my eye and the window shrinks, shields up. I think of my travelling friend, my kindred spirit. I think I fancy her a bit. She's sitting behind me and I realise that I can't covertly observe her shield status without turning my head. She has the high ground. Perhaps she's looking at me now. Can I feel her watching me? Do I look round? I start to turn my head. I look as far to my right as possible and let my head follow my eye in a slow, steady turn. I am a chameleon. The movement is imperceptible and outside the range of. I stop mid-turn and shift my gaze back to the left and up, and I am staring into the eyes of the texting stage 5 not right sat next to me. Shit. All right, mate, he says, with an affable simplicity. He's grinning stupidly, and before I have a chance to answer, he chuckles to himself and returns his attention to his phone. My head is still in mid-turn. I hold it there for a moment while deciding to get out of this with minimal embarrassment. I decide that I live with a kind of day-to-day background embarrassment, which renders the question moot. I look towards the back of the seat in front and sigh deeply. I am lost. Lost in my own past. I'm out of date like the packet of bacon sitting in my woefully understocked fridge. The recycling stands expectantly in a box on the kitchen table longing for salvation. I do get an email reminder from the council each week telling me with efficient and consistent inaccuracy the coloured bin I need to put out that day. Of course, I need to put it out the day before in reality, unless I happen to get up at 6 o'clock and catch the collection. A collection conducted at a more leisurely pace whenever I see them in other areas, but when alighting on my patch is carried out at lightning speed, or so it would seem. These are the garbage ghosts, and these are the primary concerns of a middle-aged single man, expiry dates and the inconsistency of refuse collections. Perhaps I should just chuck it all in and accept my fate. I'm over the hill and out of ideas. No matter how much drum and bass and science fiction I consume, I'm lost in this hyper-connected plant-based vapour world. My mind is awash with contemplations on the meaning of being, complexity, and work-related mental health issues. I care deeply about the plight of humanity in what is revealing itself to be a progressively confusing era. War is happening again. The idiots are on the march again. Once more, we suffer the unrelenting presence of a Tory government capable of holding on to power way past the point of competency. The Peter Principle is alive and well in party politics. This is perhaps the only true constant in modern living. I have compassion, self-knowledge, insight, and the will to be better, to do better, to avail myself of others in need. But how do I realise and execute these inner drives when I no longer understand the world I seek to serve with such benevolence and human kindness? More often these days, I awake in the small hours, suffering a mild anxiety and resisting the urge to consume alcohol and caffeine and smoke badly rolled cigarettes. Once upon a time, I would have read some William Gibson or Frank Herbert until the effects of late-night page-turning had its soporific effect and would send me drifting into the arms of a blissful sleep. Now, I watch Nouveau American Netflix programmes with endless seasons, not series, barrelling from episode to episode until I enter a streaming TV fugue state. I arise at 8:30, agitated and disconnected from my own sense of purpose. The guy in the seat next to me is making excellent progress on his second steak bake, crumbs flaking from his lips to cascade down the charcoal grey of his B-list hoodie. His text conversations have now been upgraded to an actual phone call, and as far as I can gather, he is the victim of her overcommitment to her own family, and she does not give him enough attention anymore. So why is she so surprised that he fucks off with some other bird from the fish counter? He backs up his defence with the caveat that it was only a one-night stand, and he doesn't really fancy her anyway. My sense of moral superiority is quickly replaced by envy of a life so richly endowed with this level of romantic drama. Then the memory comes thundering out of my subconscious, like Robert Vaughn in a Dodge Charger at full tilt. The life I left behind. The life I neglected and let run out of control before it spat me out in the middle of the desert, pursued by phantoms. Now it's chasing me down with a burbling V8 roar, kicking up dust so that my vision is obscured and I risk running right off the road. My old life. Do I miss it? Not really. Do I grieve for it? Every day. That spreading warmth in my chest becomes a dull throb, and my face flushes and my eyes fill with salty memory. I turn away from my pastry-consuming companion and his domestic strife and rest my head against the cool of the window. The sky has clouded again and the glass is streaked with rain as we make steady progress along the motorway. Then the mind-spooling begins. A Rolodex of painful reminiscence unravels inside my head. I watch the show like I watch the Netflix shows in the early hours and let the emotion bubble through me. A tidal bore forcing its way upstream toward the source, toward the child. But there is also beauty there. Happy memories of holidays and milk at school with little straws. Falling asleep in the back of our old Mark II Cortina on my mother's lap as we return from a visit to her mother. At my nan's, I would snuggle under a 1940s fur coat, which smelt of mothballs, and feel comforted by this assemblage of dead animal skins. Perhaps that was what love felt like to me as a small child back then. I remember reading Stig of the Dump and took comfort in the knowledge that I was Barney and that I had an older sister who came out with me on adventures. I remember the joyful angst of being a teenager, of cider and parties and getting off with girls, and boys as well, actually. How progressive I was back in the day. I remember it all so vividly, and all through it there is a thread of something never resolved. Something that was buried a long time ago, but is now coming to the surface. I am a fossil hunter in my own life, uncovering petrified artifacts and interpreting their stories as they appear to me. Then I snap to the recent past and the arguments and shouting, the resentment and silence and the isolation of it all. I'm lost in my own story, and there is a pain in the side of my head, a dense, numbing pain, spread out across my temple, and I realise I'm actually pressing my head into the window with such force that it's causing my eyes to water. Or I was crying and pushing my head into the glass to hold back the emotion in this most intimate of public spaces. The guy on his phone is oblivious and has replaced his unhappy phone call with a killer game of Fruit Ninja. Why do I know what Fruit Ninja is? Why aren't I reading more John Le Carre novels and mowing the grass? Why aren't I having croissants and French coffee on a Sunday morning as my wife enters the room wearing a white linen dress? Why doesn't the light catch it in such a way that the shape of her waist and thighs are seen in silhouette? Because it's fantasy, darling. I wake with a start and look around. No one cares. Typical. She used to say to me that fantasy is something we should never try to achieve. Maybe that's what we had. Perhaps it was all fantasy. My ideas of parenthood, how my kids should behave, and what they should achieve. Perhaps it's all just fantasy. They fuck you up, your mum and dad, says my inner Larkin. It feels like a recorded message. Apparently, in the Hull University lift, one could still see the hastily scratched message, Larkin is a cunt, long after his death. I wonder how I will be remembered. Hopefully not as some weeping middle-aged divorcee, reduced to the most frugal of public transport options by career collapse and bad time management. All right, mate, says my companion cheerily as he brutalises digital fruit. He does not look up from the screen, but adds to his greeting, feeling better. I realise I've been lost in my own thoughts for a good 30 minutes, and my self-awareness has been such that I could well have been saying all of this out loud. Was I asleep? Did I wake up? Or was it just a memory? What's the difference anyway? Yeah, much thanks, I say with some hesitancy. Could this philandering, pasty-obsessed stage 5 not-right really have such a keen sense of awareness or even consideration for my emotional state? He turns from his game and looks at me with genuine warmth. It's shit sometimes, innit, bro? I smile weakly and he goes back to his game. I stare into space for a moment, digesting his comment. Did this guy really manage to convey an almost zen-like sense of insight in that statement? For a moment, I am convinced the phrase, it's shit sometimes, innit, bro, is the answer to a koan. I run it through in my head. I am standing at the foot of a high, narrow waterfall, which cascades into a brado pond filled with koi carp. There's a bridge crossing the flowing river, which is my connection to a more enlightened place. Halfway up the waterfall, wearing an orange hoodie and joggers, is the not right. He's still playing on his phone. He looks up for a split second to acknowledge my existence. To cross the bridge to enlightenment, I must first accept the challenge. I look up and clear my thoughts. Yes, fuck yeah, exclaims the master from his rocky ledge. Whatever, mate, crack on, but make it quick. I've got a high score going on here. I ask, Master, how do I know if the Buddha mind is real or fantasy? The master replies, it's shit sometimes, innit, bro, and goes back to his game. The bridge disappears and I am standing by the side of a muddy pond full of discarded recycling. I shake myself out of the deep contemplation and look at my companion with a new sense of respect. I pull out my library copy of Burning Chrome and commit to reading at least the next chapter before having a snooze. Briefly, I remember the bacon slowly decomposing in my fridge, and for the first time in several months I think to myself, does it really matter? The thought comes from nowhere, an effortless thought, as if it had always been there, waiting for the right moment to be thunk. I enjoy a sudden sense of freedom from all my pedantry and cynical commentary. I look to my companion and smile to myself as I watch him re-engrossed in his game. Thank you, Fruit Ninja, I think to myself, before thumbing my way back to my place in the continuing events in the life of Johnny Mnemonic.